Let's begin with a prayer. Lord, thank you for bringing us together. Thank you for, again, giving us such good news to share with people. And I pray that you would help us as we allow you to sharpen us as your instruments during this time tonight. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. I heard about a guy that went out to the horse race track, and he was sitting up in the stands, and he looked down where the horses were getting ready to run, and he noticed there was a Catholic priest there, and he was making some signs over this one horse, and they went around, the horse won. And that got him really curious, so he watched on the next race, and he saw the priest making the sign over the horse, and the horse won. That horse won. So he went and got all the money he had out of the bank. And on the next time he saw the priest making the signs over this horse, he went down real quickly and he bet his life savings on that horse. And they went out of the blocks and they started, and this horse was kind of lagging behind. He's thinking it's going to catch up, but it didn't. It got further and further behind. And they got about halfway around the track and it just stopped. And then it fell over dead. And so he was obviously devastated. So he went to the priest afterwards and he said, "I don't understand. You bless the first horse and it wins. You bless the second horse and it wins. And you bless the third horse and it dies." And the priest said, "Oh, I see you're a Protestant." And he said, "How did you know that?" And he said, "Because you don't know the difference between a blessing and last rites." Now, I tell you that story because the point is, we have been teaching you to ask questions of people, but it also helps to know a little bit about what people believe and to understand things a bit. And we've said, you know, to find out what people believe, rather than going read a book, ask them. But to really be effective in this method that we're trying to coach you in, you need to go beyond just general questions. You need to learn to use some discernment in what kind of questions to ask. And it needs to become a little more sophisticated. So we're going to try to do that tonight. We're going to try to teach you a little bit more, take another step beyond what we've done so far, how to go a little bit further. And especially, as it says on your heading there, the subject tonight is curiosity, respect, and discernment. Or I would say a more full description would be the art of raising curiosity. And it is an art. It's not a science. Showing respect and learning to use discernment. So that's what we want to try to do tonight, is to try to increase our effectiveness in how we deal with people as we have these conversations with them. But before we do that, last week we gave you another handout, and there was an article in there about Stephanie Gray, and there was a link to listen to her, and there was an article by John Piper. Any questions or comments on those articles before we get into tonight's material? Someone? Yes. Oh, dear. Confession is good for the soul, but it's bad for the reputation. All right. Anybody have a comment on the articles, or anyone watch Stephanie Gray online or listen to her talk, whatever, that would like to comment on that? I know someone has listened to it and enjoyed it. Okay.
I don't know how many of you watch or Stephanie Gray, but the first thing I thought about when I was listening to her is that we need to pray for her, because she's so incredibly effective that I'm sure the devil does not want her out there talking.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, propounding biblical beliefs without people know that that's what she's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then I, listening to her, I felt so inadequate because she's such an incredible, winsome speaker. But you talk about the Columbo method. I mean, she asked questions and she told stories. And when I finally read the book, finished reading the book Tactics, but, you know, I'd be going through the principles and I thought, give me a story. You know, we all love stories. And that's what she was doing, asking questions and telling stories, true stories about people, to get her point across.
And the first time she did that, she probably didn't do it as effectively as she does now, because she's been doing this for 16 or 17 years. But it should give us encouragement that with practice, we can become proficient in doing that sort of thing. Thank you for that comment. Someone else? Comment or a question on the article, whatever? But if you haven't read those yet, I would encourage you to do so, and especially the one by John Piper, because that's the most common question that we get about dealing with people who claim to be Christians or who grew up in the church and who've fallen away. How do we deal with those kind of people? And we're going to talk about that the last week of this course, 2 weeks from now. But that article summarizes and even goes into more detail than probably what we will we'll approach it in a little bit different way, but some great stuff there. So I would encourage you to look at that. All right. So having said that, here's the overview for tonight. We're going to look at how to practice key principles to strengthen the relationship that we have with folks. And this session encompasses a number of key concepts to help us love people genuinely, regardless of whether they believe or not. In other words, to be genuine friends to them, not just a project to try to get them saved, but people that we're really, truly care and concerned about. I don't know if Nathan mentioned this when he spoke here a few weeks ago, Nathan Saucy, but when he did the same thing, I interviewed him this past Sunday in a Sunday school class, and one of the things he said was that this fellow that he's been talking to who's not a Christian, the more he talks to him, the more compassion he has for them, and the more he wants to see the guy come and know the Lord, just as a friend. And it's sad to think that he right now, if he died, he wouldn't go to heaven. And so that's real friendship. He really cares about this guy and wants to see him come to know the Lord. And then the objectives for tonight, first, is learning to raise curiosity or put a stone in their shoe and to leave them wanting more. That little last little phrase, leave them wanting more. One of the things that we as evangelical Christians have unfortunately been guilty of is talking to people to the extent that they're glad we finally stopped. And we don't want to be that kind of person. We want to learn to read their body language, their facial expressions, their tone of voice, so that we leave them wanting more rather than just being glad we finally stopped. And I'm going to give you some examples of that. We'll talk about that later. The second is showing respect and valuing them as a person made in the image of God, not merely your evangelism project. And third, learning the art and need for discernment in our conversations and when to cut conversations off. So having said that, feedback on some conversations you've had this past week that you'd like to share, or if you weren't here last week and you want to share from 2 weeks ago, whatever. Feedback on conversations, and I know some of you have been having them because some of you have told me, so I don't have to start calling names out, so just go ahead and volunteer and start sharing. Okay, Cindy, go ahead.
I work at UAB. And, you know, Harry talks about having margins of time that you allow yourself to minister to other people, but I'm too selfish to do that. I don't usually go to lunch. I eat at my desk. But Tuesday morning, I had a wellness check. And usually, unless I get over there early, my blood pressure is too high. So I went over there 30 minutes early, had my little questioning evangelism book, and I was going to sit down and quietly read before I went over to get my little blood test. And so I'm sitting in the Starbucks area, and there's this one guy there. There's several people around, so I sat down at this one table, and this one guy looks over and says, what are you reading? I said, well, I'm reading a book on how to talk to people about Jesus. He said, well, do you want to talk to me about Jesus? And I said, no, I got to read my book. So we talked for probably 20 minutes or so. Now, he had a blanket around his shoulders, and he was drinking a Starbucks. I assumed he was probably a patient. Ended up, he was homeless. He didn't look like your typical homeless. A lot of those people, if you've talked with them, have some sort of mental issues. But he was very, very cognizant. He knew the Bible. We talked quite a bit. We talked about Jesus, and he wondered about what Jesus did before he was 30 years old. And I talked about when he was 12 and he went to the temple and his parents had to find him there. We just a lot of different topics and different things about the Word and John 3:16, but I did ask him as we were winding up the conversation, because as I talked to Bobby, the odds that I'd see this guy again are pretty slim, that had he ever put his trust in Jesus, because he said he thought that Jesus had died for the sins of everybody in the world, and he said he had. I said, you know, have you trusted in him for your salvation? And he said he had, but it was, you know, it was just a very interesting conversation, nothing that I planned for.
Great. It's nice when they open the conversation like that. That's what I need, because I don't initiate well. Okay, someone else have a conversation to tell us about? We learn from one another. Going once, going twice. Okay, we'll move on then. What we want to do now is want to introduce you to another useful question. And this question is one word. Okay, so here's the question that is very useful in these conversations. Here it is. Really? Now, there's different ways you could say that, right? That some could be negative, some could be interrogating the person, But there's a way that you can say that, which is very useful. For one thing, one of the reasons that question is good is, let's say somebody, you had a conversation with someone, and they make a statement, or they ask a, let's say they make a statement. They make a statement about something they believe or they think, or they make a comment on something, and you're dumbfounded. You don't know what to say next. Then that's where this question is great. You can say, really? And then just pause, because it gives you time. It's a stalling technique, you see. It gives you time to think. But also, if you say to them in a nice way, really? Then they stop and think about what they just said. And so it helps them think through it. But it's a great question to introduce things. It's a great way to start, because it does give you time to think. Just to say, really? And I'm going to give you an example later on of how you can use that in a conversation and how I have used it. So we're going to give you some examples of that. But just keep in mind right now that really is really a good question. It's a good thing to ask people when you're in these conversations. All right, so let's move on to our biblical study for tonight. And that is two verses here from Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 26, verses 4 and 5. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. Now, if these two verses weren't right together, if they were in one was in one book and one was in another, it would be an example that a person might say, oh, see, the Bible contradicts itself, because it says, answer a fool and don't answer a fool according to his folly. And then it says, answer a fool. But the fact that they're back to back tells us the author intended that. And the second part of the sentence is different, isn't it? Lest you be like him, or lest he be wise in his own eyes. So it's actually communicating different things. And we want to talk about these verses and try to give some examples of it. So let's look at the first. We're going to look at the first one for a moment, and that is verse 4. And this is what we call a smoke screen. You know, if you're in a battle situation, in a real war, sometimes soldiers may put off some kind of a smoky object, which has the effect of obscuring, they can't see them. And so it's something to hide behind, you might say, a smoke screen, just something where people can't see you. And people do that all the time when you're in conversations with them. So here's our verse. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. So what we have found over the years is that sometimes when you're in a conversation with a person, they raise an issue. It could be by making a statement or asking a question, but they raise the issue not because they're really concerned about it, but because it's a smoke screen. They're trying to avoid the issue that you're talking to them about. So smoke screens are something that they're trying to use because they really don't know the answer, or they don't want to answer. They're trying to derail the discussion, especially if it's something that relates to them personally. They may not want to talk about it. And so they're kind of changing the subject by raising some issue that's really just a smoke screen. They don't really want to know. Sometimes people do this. They just want to be argumentative. As it says, don't answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. In other words, they're being argumentative sometimes. And what they're trying to do, I talked to a guy the other day that said knew someone that was trying to do this. They just want to rile you up. And they want to be argumentative, and they want to say things that are very slanderous towards Christians or towards the Lord or towards the Bible, and see how you respond. And then if you get angry, they say, see, you Christians, you just can't handle the truth. You're just angry all the time. And people actually do that. They're trying to get you riled up. And so don't be like them. Don't do the same sort of things that they're doing. And so even when people raise their voice towards us, we can just remain calm. Even when they say things that are derogatory about the Lord or the Bible or about evangelicals or whatever, we don't have to respond in kind. They will sometimes make very sarcastic comments about Christians or about the Bible or about God or about Jesus. My father-in-law used to refer to Jesus as that barefoot Jew, you know, and things like that, just to try to get a response from all of his Christian relatives, including me. And so don't take the bait and become sarcastic back to them. You know, for my father-in-law to make statements like that and just say, oh, Jesus was just a barefoot Jew running his mouth, you know, a long time ago, and he was no more God than me or you. You know, I could have come back with something sarcastic. Well, yeah, and you're going to burn in hell for that remark. And you know what? That might be a true statement, but it doesn't help the argument, does it? It doesn't help the relationship, and it cuts off things. And so we don't want to be like fools We don't want to show disrespect. They may be showing disrespect towards us, towards things we hold dear, the Lord Jesus, our Bible, our church. We don't have to respond in kind. We don't have to be like them and show disrespect. So don't answer a fool according to their foolish ways. Rather, a better proverb for us is a soft answer turns away wrath. A soft answer turns away wrath. So when people say things that are designed to rile us up, don't give in. Pastor Reeder likes to refer to this, he calls it washing their feet so that they want to talk to you again. In other words, you're so nice to them, you do something good to them, that they want to interact with you again because you've shown respect and concern for them even when they disagree with you and even when they abuse you verbally. And I've seen this happen many times. There was a guy named Dion that became a Christian in South Africa when I was there working in the campus ministry. But he became a Christian during the summer break. And he knew, and he grew really fast during those couple of months. And when he came back, he knew he was going to have to face all of his non-Christian friends that he hung around with all the time. And so as soon as they came back to school, they wanted him to go out and get drunk with them. And he said, I don't get drunk. And they said, what do you mean you don't get drunk? You were the leader of the pack. He said, I've changed. I don't do that anymore. Well, what do you mean you don't do it anymore? So eventually they got it out of him that he'd become a Christian. Woo! Did they ever give him a hard time? He was telling me this story. He said, you've got to come and have dinner with me at the dorm so you can see it for yourself. So I did. I went and had dinner with him. And so what they would do is during dinner, they'd be giving him a hard time. And then they would say, okay, Dion, you're a Christian, so you have to go get the tea and coffee for us. So he would take orders, you know, there were about six or eight of them, and he'd, who wants tea, who wants coffee? And he'd go get the tea and coffee, which was a tradition in South Africa. And while he was gone, they would eat his dessert. And he told me they would do that. They did it right there in front of me. And they would make rude comments like, who is this guy? Who's this old guy with you? You know? And then they would, he said, oh, this is Bobby. He works for Campus Crusade. Oh, one of those. I mean, they were just rude. But they did it on purpose. You know, by the time the year was over, four of those guys had become Christians. Because he just continued to respond and be their friend and not treat them the way they treated him. So that's what we got to do. Okay, the next verse is Proverbs 26:5. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So sometimes we have to answer their foolishness by gently showing them their foolishness. If we don't, then they just move on in their smugness and they think they're right. And so there is a time when a person is a fool and they're being very smug about it and they're sharing their opinions that we do need to kind of show them the error of their ways. And that's what he says here. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So let me give you an example of this. One of the questions issues that has come up every time we do this course is a very common subject out there. And that is people will sometimes say things like, well, all religions are the same. Sometimes they'll qualify, well, all religions are just about love. Or God is a God of love. And they'll make all these comments. And what do we do when they say that? They're wrong, aren't they? All religions are not the same. So how do we get that across them? Do we just say, well, you're an idiot for thinking that? That's really the way to do it, right? No. If you haven't been listening for the last 4 weeks, if that's what you think. So I'm going to show you how I actually do this. And you're going to have to imagine, I'm not much of an artist, even with a pen and paper, but on a PowerPoint, I'm even worse. So here's what I do. When a person tells me all religion is the same, I will say something like, really? How did you come to that conclusion? Really? You know, see, really? How did you come to that conclusion? That's one of the Columbo questions. And listen to what they have to say. And then I'll say, well, have you studied comparative religions? You know, I've done a lot of studying religions myself. And I know a lot about them, but I don't tell them that. I just say, oh, have you done it? Did you do like a college course on comparative religions or something? And most of them will say, oh, no. I just know. You know, everybody knows this. Okay. And so I'll ask a few questions like that. So I can say, well, let me share something with you that might make you think about this a little bit differently. And so then what I do is I draw four stick figures. And mine don't even look that good when I do it with pen and paper. But I draw four stick figures. And I say, okay, let's imagine these four people in the world. And one of them is a Muslim, one of them is a Buddhist, one of them is a Hindu, and one of them is a Christian. So I write that above them. Okay? And they say, right. I say, okay. And then depending on the situation, usually I'll want to ask questions and lead them through this. Sometimes I'll just have to tell them depending on what the conversation is going like. But what I like to say is, well, what do you know about these religions? Well, what do you know about Islam? I mean, Islam's in the news all the time, right? Because We've had wars with Islamic countries, etc. So what do you know about Muslims as far as their view of God, since you say all religions are the same? I don't know a lot. You know, they have some God named Allah or whatever, you know. And so I say, okay. And so I say, well, the Muslims believe in one God. They're very adamant about that. There's one God, and you can only call him Allah. So I'll write that below the Muslim person, you see. There's one God, and his name is Allah, and that's it. You cannot call him anything else. That's to them, that's blasphemous. He's Allah. What do you know about Buddhists and their view of God? Most people wouldn't know. Well, Buddha himself was an agnostic. In the Buddhist religion, it doesn't matter whether there's a God or not. It's not about God. And so it's irrelevant. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. Okay? And then what about Hindus? Well, Hindus believe there are many gods. We don't even know how many. It could be millions. There's at least hundreds or thousands that have been identified. Because everything can be a god, just about anything alive can be a god in Hinduism. And then what about the Christians? We believe there's one God, but in three persons. And that Jesus is God. Okay? And so, when you look at that, how similar are those? Now, if that hasn't... Yes, ma'am. Yes, those are statues of Buddha, and people worship those statues, which would be incorrect in Buddha's own thinking, because he did not claim to be a god. He was an enlightened one, okay? And so he did not claim to be God, and he didn't care if there was a God. That wasn't part of his religion. He was agnostic himself. And so you can be agnostic and be a good Buddhist. And they do bow down and worship those statues, but they shouldn't, because Buddha didn't claim to be a God, okay? Most people won't know all that, but since you asked the question. All right, so at that point, they should be able to acknowledge, okay, well, they're different. But they may say, oh, yeah, but it's all about love. Okay, so then I go, well, let's go a little bit further. And you don't have to know a lot to get this. I say, well, let's see what these different religions talk about how to get to heaven. So the Muslim says you get to heaven by your works. You have to do good deeds. And we could go into detail about that, but I usually won't. But if they want to, we can. And you don't need to know a lot to be able to say, here's some of the things they say. They have the... You know, they have the five pillars that they have to do, the prayer and this and that and the other. What about Buddhists? Well, that's not the goal, getting to heaven, because there's no such place. In Buddhism, there is no such place as heaven. And so what they have to do to get to this state of nirvana, which is a state of being, it's all about works again. They have to do something, the things they have to do. But it's not to get to a place called heaven, because there is not one in their religion. What about Hindus? Well, the same thing. There is no heaven. But the problem in Hinduism is you've got this karma attached to it, and you have to get rid of this through successive reincarnations. And then what about the Christian religion? Well, we believe in grace. We believe that we get to heaven free by what God does. It's not by works. And heaven is a real place, and we'll be present with God there. So looking at that, would you say that all religions are the same, just looking at these four? Now, they're going to have to be pretty hard-nosed or an idiot at that point, or be really determined to stick to their view to say, yeah, they're all the same, because just in that little short survey, which takes about 3 minutes to go through, it's very obvious all religions are not the same. And we could add Judaism in there and some others as well if we wanted to, and they're all different. Okay? And then if they want to harp on the thing, well, but religions is all about God and loving each other. Really? Where did you come up with that? Where does the religion of Islam teach that we should love one another? It doesn't. What does the religion of Islam teach about the love of God? It doesn't. So in other words, sometimes you have to answer a fool according to his folly and show them that they're actually wrong. But you can do it in a nice way. And this is the way I like to do it. Okay. So again, as I've been saying this whole course, even in doing something like this, the more questions I can use to draw things out of them, the better. And questions also can really show them how little they know. Like when I say, well, what do you know about Islam? You know, they've just made this comment that all religions are the same. And I say, okay, what do you know about Islam? And they know almost nothing. Well, they know they have a prophet named Muhammad. Okay, great. Not all religions have a prophet named Muhammad. So if that's all you know about them, even there, not all religions are the same. All right. So by asking questions, it exposes the fact that they don't know what they're talking about. We're talking about fools here, right? People that are mouthing off and telling their opinions about things. But as I say, it's helpful to keep asking questions as much as we can. And so what we're trying to do here is not give you a prescribed list of questions to ask or tactics to use necessarily, but rather a mindset to begin developing your way of thinking. It's not trying to learn all the right words or have all the right booklets or anticipate all the right questions or memorizing all the right scripture, but it's really an approach to evangelism that uses wisdom. The Proverbs talk about wisdom, and we want to be wise in the way we deal with people. So, so we really want people to come to know the Lord, and sometimes we have to be compassionate, use wisdom, and point out the error of their way. So that's going to lead to humbly interacting with people and gently correcting them, which we have to do. The Scriptures tell us to gently correct people. And sometimes a person is bringing up a question, and sometimes what I find is they'll bring up question after question. And so sometimes I might just stop them and say, well, you know, why are you asking all these questions? Are you really seriously interested in becoming a Christian? If I can answer every question that you ask, would you become a Christian? And sometimes people will say, well, yeah, if you could answer all my questions, they may be a genuine seeker. But some will say, no, I've had guys tell me, no, I'm not really interested in all that. I'm just asking those questions because I've heard people ask them before. They're not a genuine seeker in that case, okay? All right, so one of the things that we want to do is it's important to show respect. Look at what Proverbs 18:19 up on the board says. A brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city, and quarreling is like the bars of a castle. So we don't want someone that we've talked to going out, and the next Christian that meets them says this person is not only a U5, it's like the guy that Nathan was describing, he's a U8 or a U10. We don't want to be the cause of that. We want to deal with people in gentleness and respect. We don't want to be offensive because we don't want to be the one that causes people to go further from Christ. We want to be bringing them closer to Christ. So a lot of times what I've seen is that Christians are more concerned with winning the battle, that is, in this one conversation, than in winning the war, that is, winning the person. And so we want to be careful about that. And the next passage, Proverbs 17:4, says the beginning of strife is like letting out water. So quit before the quarrel breaks out. So think about that. What does that mean? What happens when you let water out on the ground? You poured it out. Can you put it back in the container? No way. Once it's out, it's out. It's not going back in there. And so similarly, we want to be careful not to get into quarrels because you cannot undo the damage that you do by the things that you say in saying the wrong things and in saying them with a harsh tone of voice and those sort of things. And so we want to rather apply the article we gave you a couple weeks ago on getting off the hot seat. If we feel like we're on the hot seat and we're feeling attacked, we want to turn things around and ask them, well, how did you come to that? You know, you're asking about this. How did you come to that conclusion? How did you arrive at that? What have you been reading that's made you think this way? In other words, put the onus back on them to defend their views rather than us always being on the hot seat. Becky Pippert, who's written the book Out of the Salt Shaker and Into the World, which describes this process, she's actually coming here to speak in August, I believe. Is that right, Benny? August? She says that when she does courses like this, she asks the people, how many of you have done something in a conversation with a friend or a family member in trying to talk to them about Jesus, and you feel like you have actually burned the bridge with them, and now you're afraid to talk to them? And she says most of the people, almost 100%, will raise their hand and say, yeah, I've done that. And then she'll ask them this question. How many of you have actually acknowledged that to your family or friend and said, I know that I've offended you and I'm afraid to talk to you about this? She says no hands go up. But she says that's just a nice, honest way to do it, is to say to them, I know the last time we talked, I said some things I shouldn't have said. I'm really sorry about that, and I don't want that to come between us, you know, and I just wanted you to know that I've been afraid to talk to you about anything religious because I'm afraid I'm going to offend you again. People appreciate that kind of candor and honesty, and so she recommends doing that. If you think about that movie that was out recently that some of you are still out, some of you may have seen it, I can only imagine. There's the scene in there where there's the father and the son have had a falling out for many years. And the son comes back and he's at that point kind of estranged from the Lord himself. And what does the father do? He makes breakfast for the son. And the son just scoffs at it. But then he comes back and at the beginning of talking about things. In other words, he's rebuilding a bridge just by doing something nice, making a breakfast. And so there's things that we can do like that. We can also, when we realize that we burned a bridge, we can do things to re-engage the conversation and hopefully raise their curiosity, because that's one of the things we're talking about here tonight, is raising their curiosity, again, by not telling them something, but by asking questions and just listening. And so sometimes that means we have to demonstrate a lot of humility. We have to acknowledge that maybe we have offended them in the past. And then one of the things that's good to do is to go back to something and say, you know, when we talked the last time, I really didn't listen well to what you had to say. I was so interested in telling you what I believed. I wasn't really listening to what you had to say. So let's go back to something you said. And I want you to tell me, explain yourself to me more. I really want to understand you. And so you see, it's just being real with them and asking those questions. And what you're doing there is now reengaging the conversation. But you're asking them to tell you more about their beliefs or whatever the subject was you were discussing. And then you listen and you don't start preaching at them because you're going to end up in another problem. All right. So there's another type of person that we have to deal with. Greg Kochel in his book uses the term steamrollers. A steamroller is a person that just runs over you. And I've had people like this. I remember there was a guy, a student when I was on campus staff in South Africa. And I approached this guy and he had a friend with him. And I asked him if we could talk to him about Jesus for a few minutes. And he was a steamroller and he was a very arrogant guy. He just started in on us and he asked me a question. He said, "Oh, you Christians," and he's saying all this stuff. And he said, "How can you believe the Bible? You know, it's been changed so many times." And I just said, "Well, you know, I don't really think it has been changed, and I can answer that." And so I started, and before I finished the first sentence, he changed the subject. He said, "Well, what about these people that, you know, live on some remote island where there's never been a Christian missionary? Are they all going to hell?" Those are two totally different questions, right? But I said to him, "Well, yeah, I can answer that question." And before I could finish the sentence, he changed the subject and asked some other question. He was a steamroller. You know, because the problem was he didn't really want answers to any of those questions because he never let me even answer the first one. I never even completed a sentence before he would go on. And after about the fifth question, I don't even know what all of them were. I just said, "You know, I can tell that you're not really interested in pursuing this. And so have a good day." And I turned around and walked off. And that's sometimes what we need to do. We just need to walk away from people. Now, in his book, Greg Kochel gives several other ways to deal with steamrollers. We're not going to go into that for the sake of time. It's a little more advanced. But sometimes when you encounter a person and you realize they're a steamroller, just say, "Have a good day. I'm sorry if I've offended you," and walk off and just leave them. And that's sometimes the best approach to take because they're not ready to have a serious conversation, at least not with you, maybe somebody else. And so you want to be careful. So Proverbs 9:7 relates to this. It said, "Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse. And he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury." So when you're talking to a person who's a steamroller, they are a scoffer. And you're just going to get abuse if you keep trying. It's not going to work. Proverbs 9:8 says this, "Do not reprove a scoffer or he will hate you." So we just need to take the wisdom of Proverbs and realize there's some people we just need to leave. People who are scoffers need to be handled carefully so that hopefully the next person that comes along, they will be a little bit more open if we handle them in a nice way. And telling them how wrong they are is not usually going to help. Wise people, we need to be wise in the way we deal with people. All right, so now at that point, Benny, you want to come on up here? We're going to do a little dialogue for you on how to raise curiosity. And we got these ideas from this book. One of the books that's in your booklet is called Get Real, Sharing Your Everyday Faith Every Day by John Leonard, who's a PCA pastor up in Pennsylvania. And so here's the stage. I'm a missionary working amongst Muslim immigrants in southern France. All right, so you got the picture. And this particular situation is we've met this couple. They've been over to the house to eat. And so now they're eating with me and my wife. And the girl, who's a Muslim from Morocco, is dating a boy named Joseph, who is from Lebanon, and he has a Catholic background. But neither of them are really practicing their religion, obviously, or they wouldn't be dating each other as a Muslim and a Catholic, okay? So we're having dinner, and we're discussing Christianity. And so Joseph here.
Well, Bobby, you know, no one can really know what happens to them when they die.
Oh, yeah, the Bible tells you clearly what will happen to you when you die.
No, my uncle is a priest, and if anyone would know what happens to them when they die, he would know. And he said you can't know.
Really? Well, there's passages in the Gospel of John that are so clear that anyone reading them would know what is going to happen to them when they die.
Show me those verses.
I don't want to show you those verses because I don't want to prejudice your reading of them yourself. So they're clear, and anyone can find them if they just take the time to read John's gospel.
Show me the verses.
No, look, Joseph, I gave you a Bible, so go read it for yourself. I tell you what, you go read the gospel of John. I'll come by to see you on Wednesday. And if you read the gospel of John, we'll talk about the verses you find, but you need to find them yourself. All right? So what's happened here? Instead of just telling him the answer, which is what I would have been tempted to do. Oh, you want to know the verses to talk about Jesus? Yeah, let me show them to you. He raised his curiosity by refusing to answer. He said, go read it. Find it yourself. And the guy did. And so fast forward, they met on Wednesday. Hey, friend, did you read the Gospel of John?
I did. And I found those verses you were talking about that spoke about eternal life.
Wow. What do you think?
I think it's too good to be true.
Well, it does seem too good to be true, but it's not. And so he tells the story in his book that they then had a discussion for the next 2 hours. And in the process, Joseph gave his life to Christ. So raising curiosity is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And so sometimes we think, oh, right, I got to give them all the answers. Let them sometimes find the answer themselves. The Bible is powerful. Let them look it up and find it in the Word of God. So we want to learn. I think the next thing on our. Yeah, that was raising curiosity. We want to learn to use discernment. That's part of tonight's lesson, is learning to use discernment. So this is the point at which you need to be especially attuned to things like their body language, their tone of voice, to see, are they interested? Are they engaging with you? If they're not, you know, there's not a whole lot that you can do. And so we need to become an observer of people. You know, we want to leave them wanting more. And so I've had many conversations with people where it's obvious they've talked enough about this religious subject. They're beginning to feel quite uncomfortable. And so at that point, I change the subject. And so if I'm talking to, let's say I'm talking to a guy, and which is usually who I talk to, not too many girls. So I'm talking to a guy and we're talking about these things, and I'm aware that he's getting a little uncomfortable. And what I'll do is I'll just completely change the subject by asking him about some sporting event recently. So if it was back in February, I'd say, hey, what'd you think about the Super Bowl? I mean, I've totally changed subjects, right? We're talking about spiritual things, and I just completely changed the subject. And you know what? I've done that so many times, and I can see people visibly relax. And we start talking about that. And we don't go back to the spiritual thing on that conversation. Now, I'll come back to it at a later time, but I don't do it on that conversation because I can see this guy is not enjoying this at that point. And so one of the things that I've discovered is we need to figure out, we need to discern when it's best to walk away. But that's more of an art than a science. It's not obvious, but we have to just become an observer of people. So, for example, there was a guy that I met some years ago who was a student. And he showed a real interest. And we had about a 2-hour lunch conversation. He was not a Christian. We met a few weeks later. We had another 2-hour conversation. And we continued to have these conversations. And he was getting more interested. And we, you know, he wasn't a Christian, but obviously there were some good things happening. And I won't go into all that. But one of the things I noticed, there was another guy in his class who was real smart. And I'd been in a few meetings where I'd seen him make comments. And he was not a Christian either. And I just thought, that's a guy I would like to try to engage in a conversation. Because he'd been to a few of our meetings, even though he's not a Christian. And so one day, I asked this one fellow that I was meeting with, I said, do you know so-and-so in your class? He said, do I know him? He's my roommate. And I said, oh, really? He said, why? And I said, well, you know, I saw him in our meeting the other day, and I said hi, and I was just thinking, it'd be a nice guy to get to know. And he said, oh, yeah, let's get together. We'll have a lunch together. And I said, great. So we had a lunch together. And, you know, that guy was not the least bit interested in anything spiritual. We had lunch. We talked for a couple hours. But it was really me and the first guy that did more of the talking. And when the other guy said anything, it was more negative. And it was more questioning. And there didn't seem to be a real interest. And after that, I would see him, and he never seemed to be interested in carrying on a conversation. So I just left it. You know, but the first guy that I kept talking to for the next 2 years eventually became a Christian. So sometimes we just got to use a little discernment to say, this person is interested, they're engaging, this person's not. God doesn't want to use me in the life of every person. He may want to use you in their life. And so we have to just use a little discernment in that. In his book, in John Lennard's book, he makes a statement, if they're not curious, let them go. So here's an example. I was on a mission trip with our dental students one year, some years ago, and we were going around this little community in the mornings while the dental clinic was going on, and we would go up to these people that were sitting out, just sitting around, and there were also little shops that were selling all kinds of things that would open, that were opening up in the morning, like around 9 o'clock. And so we would go out there to the shop owners, and a lot of them, there was nobody at the shop. Okay? There was no one coming into the shop. It was in the morning, early. But they would just come and stand in the entrance of their shop. And so we'd go up and introduce ourselves and talk to them. And some of them were really interested, and we'd have good conversations. So we went up to this one girl one day, and she looked like she was about 20. And we start talking to her. And at first, she was interested to talk because we're gringos, and they don't really have people like that in this real remote village where we were. But then when I started turning the conversation to talking about her spiritual life, there was no doubt she was not interested. And in fact, she had her cell phone, and she had it like this. And she was, what she was doing was she was texting while I was talking to her. So she was going, And so she was texting someone back and forth, and she wasn't really paying attention to what I said. Well, I have a little trick that I use in situations like that, because what people often do when they're not interested is they just say yes, 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 when they're not really thinking about what you said. So what I do is I ask them a question which cannot be answered by yes or no. Okay? So in other words, rather than saying, do you believe that Jesus was the Son of God, which they can say yes or no, I would say, who is Jesus? And they would say yes. That tells me they're not paying attention. And so I did that. I asked her one of these questions. I don't know what it was. And she said, see? And I said, you know, have a good day. We're going to move on. And we just left. And the student said, You just left. You're not gonna share the gospel with her? And I said, she's not interested. She's not listening to what we're saying. You know, what good are we gonna do trying to talk to her when she's obviously not interested? So that's just a thing of learning to discern that sometimes people just are not interested. Now sometimes when I do this sort of thing, people say to me, aren't you afraid if you don't go ahead and share with them that they might die and go to hell? And I say, no. That's where our Reformed theology is very important. We gave you an article the first week about evangelism and the sovereignty of God. If the God is working in that person's life and he wants me to reach them, there's going to be some interest shown. Okay? If he's not working in their life, I can stand there and share the gospel. I can use the Roman road. I can use Bridge to Life. I can use the Four Spiritual Law. I can use all three of them. If God is not working, all it's going to do is make them angry that I keep going on the same stuff over and over and over again. So my Reformed theology gives me comfort that I don't have to worry about that. Because if a person is interested, it'll become obvious. And if they're not, it's not my job to reach them. It's God's job to change them. And maybe it's the next person that's going to reach them. And maybe they're going to be more open to the next person because I don't make them listen to me for an hour when they're obviously not interested. But I'm just nice to them. And so that's where I'll sometimes change the subject and talk about things that they're more interested in, which also has the benefit of giving me something else to talk to them about the next time I see them, rather than just spiritual things. So that's sort of the way I do things. All right. Now, let's move on. Let's have a little bit of interaction here. Put some of this into practice. One of the things is it's difficult to say where a dialogue is going to go. We've given you some questions to help you get started. There's millions of ways to get into conversations with people. There's not just one way. And those questions are not necessarily the best way. It was just to get you started. But once you start the conversation going, and some of you are having these conversations, where you go next, there can be many options of where you go next. There are no two conversations are going to be exactly the same because no two people are exactly the same. All right? So one of the things Ben and I are willing to help you with is we call it customized evangelism or tailor-made evangelism. If you've got a particular person that you're having conversations with, obviously, we can't take each of you individually in class and spend half an hour talking through that. But you want to call us, talk through it. Here's what this person said. What do you think I should say next? We're willing to help you then think through how to handle different situations. We can't do that here. We can only go by principles. But we're willing to help if you want to talk to us about that. But what we would like to do for the next few minutes is we'd like to take a few of the statements that people have said when we've asked them some of those other questions. What are some of the things they said, and how might we respond next? And so let's look at these. So here's the first one. Someone says, our world is a mess because people are not connected. There's so much division. So if a person said that to you after you asked them that first question that we gave you, what's the problem in the world? How might you respond? There's probably many, many ways. So let's just hear a few ideas. Benny's got the mic. He'll bring it to you. How might you respond to that statement that they make? It's not a right or wrong. There's many ways. So how might you do it? Now, let's get the mic.
What do you mean by not connected?
Great. In other words, explain yourself a little bit more. I'm not sure I understand. What do you mean? What do you mean by not connected? Okay. Who knows where it's going to go from there, but that's great. Because you've asked a question. All right, good. What else? Another idea. Come on, you're on the spot now. You're talking to this person. Really will only get you by for a while. Okay?
Yeah. How do you think people are divided?
What's that?
How do you think people are divided?
How do you think they're divided? Okay. Yeah, thanks.
I'll use your fake and say, really?
Really? Okay. Somebody's listening. That's good. Nathan, everyone.
Why do you think they're divided?
Why
do you think the world's divided?
Yes. Why is a very good question. Yeah. Asking the what do you mean by that, that's great. But then follow up with, well, why do you think that's so? Very good. Being able to get a little idea of their worldview and their thinking there. Okay. What else? Yeah.
You mentioned that they're not connected. Tell me what you mean by that.
Okay, good. That's right. Draw them out a little bit. The more they tell you, the more you'll be able to see where to go next, and the more you'll be able to see how the gospel can relate to their issues. All right, here. Yeah.
Well, what kind of mess are you talking about?
Okay, what kind of mess are you talking about? Very good. That's good. Yeah, all those are good. You just listen to what they say and then ask a question. Ask them to clarify. One of the things that I might ask them is, well, what's the root cause? You know, or why do people have a hard time getting along? It's kind of like what you said. I want to see what they think, because why do I think people have a hard time getting along? I mean, I can partially agree with his statement, right? So why do people have a hard time? Why are people divided? Why do they have a hard time getting along? What's a biblical answer to that? Sin. Yeah, that's the answer. That's the problem. And so that's from a Christian point of view. Now, I want to know what do they think before I just tell them. I want to hear what they say and then go from there. All right. Any other comments about that before we move on to the next one? We're going to do this with a few statements. Another suggestion or idea? All right, let's go to the next one. Here's the next one. I believe all people will ultimately go to heaven because God is a God of love. All right. How might you respond to that? That's a very popular view out there. Benny, right here, front, Nathan.
So how do you define love?
Good. That's a very good one. Yeah. All right. Over here, Benny, Royce.
It's certainly true that God is a God of love, but do you think there's another side of that, another side of that question? Could he be a God of justice? What do you think about that?
Yeah, very good. In other words, people are just focusing on one little attribute of God when there's a lot of things about God, and justice is a very important one. That's something we would need to get to on this particular question. So good, Roy. Okay, what else? Yeah.
I mean, I would ask, too, I mean, where do you get your information from that leads you to believe that all people will go to heaven? Where are you getting that from?
Very good. Very good. Thanks, Michael. And you could ask the same thing about where do you get your information that God is a God of love? And if they say, well, from the Bible, okay, now we got something to work with because you brought the Bible into this discussion. So, yeah, that's good. Yeah, there's one here.
I would say, are you sure ultimately all the people really go to hell? Or go to heaven?
Yeah. Over here.
yes, God is a... Most people do think God is a God of love. Where do you think God is when bad things happen?
Okay, good. That's a tough question. See what they say about that. You know what? One of the things that I like to do when people make a statement like this is to ask all people, right? You're saying all people? Are we saying Hitler's going to heaven? I mean, he's sort of a worst case scenario, right? I mean, you could use Osama bin Laden or many other people. You could use the guy that shot the kids at the school recently. You know, there's all kinds of examples of terrible people. Charles Manson, who died recently, you know. There's all kinds of terrible people out there that you could pick on, but Hitler's a pretty good one. You know, do you think Hitler's going to heaven? Now, a person's got to be pretty hardcore to say yes to that. But if they do, that's interesting. You know, if they say, well, no, he's an exception. That's good if they do that, because you say, well, why is he not going to heaven? And you begin to get to the thing of, well, what is the criteria for getting into heaven? If there's an exception now to your statement, whoever it is, then there's obviously a criteria. So let's explore that a little bit. So you can go, there's many, many ways you can go there. Okay, let's get another one. I don't believe that people are inherently evil or inherently sinful. How would you respond to that one? Because that's another thing that you'll hear very common. Yes.
Do you have children?
I love it. Ever been around a toddler? That's great. Yeah. And you know, sometimes a question like that with a smile like yours, it's a winsome way. They sometimes will laugh too. And that's great. If you can get people, you know, tracking with you and you're having fun together and you're asking them a tough question, really it is, you know, you're kind of disputing what they say, but you do it in a nice, winsome way, oftentimes that goes a long way. So that's good. Yeah. Denise.
What is your definition of evil?
Very good. How do you define evil? What do you mean, evil? Yeah. What is it?
Yeah. The first reading. The second one is that there's only so much you can blame your parents.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. If it's not them, it's the parents. There you go. What else? You can. Okay, we want to get this on the recording.
It says you can bring back Hitler.
Yep.
And then you can follow it up with, so if you don't think he's inherently evil, then what? I mean, yeah. I would assume that they would agree that he at some point became evil. So what do you think led to that?
Very good. Yes. You see, people make statements and they've not thought through them. So asking things like that, like all these things, is good. It makes them start thinking through their position. Is my position really a good one? You know, how did he become evil? What is evil? You know, do you have children? I like to ask them, if you read the newspaper recently, or now since no one reads the newspaper, have you seen the news recently? You know, is there not evil in the world? So all those are great examples. All right. So we just did this little exercise to illustrate the point that there are many ways to respond to people. But the idea is what you just came up with off the cuff is the whole idea. Ask more questions. Get them to unpack it a little bit. And we're actually not carrying any of these discussions through to a logical conclusion. But you get the idea. And the more they say, and the more you ask for clarification, the more you're going to see the holes in their position. But hopefully, the more they're going to see it as well. And a lot of times when you ask people the follow-up questions, they'll go, they haven't thought about it. They don't know what to say. And that's good. That puts a stone in their shoe. It makes them start thinking, well, is what I said right? This person just asked me a very good question. So, very good way of going about it. All right, so keep in mind that this particular method does not have a set presentation. People are all different. And one of the things that you can do to train yourself in this is when you're watching something on TV or hearing something on the radio or a podcast or reading it in a newspaper or magazine, whatever, when you're reading things that people say, like these kind of statements, like, for example, there's a couple of prominent psychologists of the last generation who said that there's no evidence of any innate evilness in mankind. And so even just reading a psychology textbook, you'll pick up things like that. So when you read things like that, is to stop and think, now if I was actually talking to that person, me and them, not hearing it on TV or not reading in a book, what would I ask? What would I say? And so in other words, you can practice this technique all the time when you hear people saying things. So I'll give you an example. I was driving down to a meeting one time at UAB, and there was a guy being interviewed on the radio. He was a journalist, and he tells the story about he came from somewhere in South America, and he said he was raised Catholic, but when he came to America, He went to university and he discovered, he said, that there were no religions had no answer to the problem of suffering in the world. And so he said, so I gave up my religion. And now he's just a secular journalist. And I'm listening to that and I'm thinking, if I was in a conversation with this guy, me, not the interviewer, what would I say to that? What would you say to that? But we don't have to go there right now. But you see, I know what I would say. So I was training myself. I'm listening to what he says. And I say, I'm going to get into a conversation with someone someday. And they're going to make a statement like that. Religions have no answer to the problem of suffering. What am I going to say? What am I going to ask? And so this guy had given up religion entirely. He didn't say he was an atheist, but he'd given up religion. So my first question would be, okay, well, in your belief system, whatever it is, how do you deal with the issue of suffering in the world? See, that's getting out of the hot seat. That's putting him back on. Because what is the secular atheistic's answer to the problem of suffering in the world? You know? Their answer is, it just is. And really, if everything evolved, everything is here by accident, there's no purpose, there's no guiding God, then actually, there's no such thing as evil. What is, just is. So then for them to ask us the question, why is there evil in the world, is a ridiculous question from their worldview. Because from their point of worldview, there is no such thing as evil. Everything just is. We're the ones that believe there's such a thing as evil. You see, because we have a good God. So anyway, just train yourself. We're going to give you a video to watch in the assignment tonight of Becky Pippert, and she'll talk more about how to do that. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to become like Jesus. We want to learn to be full of grace and truth. So that's why we say we're going a little further now. We want to be gracious to people, but we want to help them see the error of their ways and their thinking and sort of bring out the truth. But there's harsh ways to do that, and there's nice ways to do that. Let me read you an example from John Leonard's book. He says this. He says, one time on Ash Wednesday, I was sitting with a friend having lunch, and a young man came in and sat down at the table next to us, and he had those ashes on his head. And so he, instead of saying to himself, what are you into all that stuff for? He just said to the guy, I see you've been to an Ash Wednesday service. He just made a statement, which was not negative. He just pointed out he noticed this. And the guy said, yeah, it was a great service. And so what did Leonard do? He said, well, what are you giving up for Lent? Now, I think that's a great question. Because he's showing an interest in this guy. Even if he doesn't believe in giving up things for Lent, which he probably doesn't as a Reformed pastor, but the point is, he was interacting with the guy where this guy was coming from. He just came from a service which he said was great. So he says, what are you giving up for Lent? And the young man said, sugar. And then he went on and elaborated, I'm giving up sugar for Lent. After all, I could stand to lose a few pounds, and sugar really isn't all that good for you. Now, what could he have said at that point that would have ended the conversation? He could have said, that's the totally wrong motivation for giving something up. There's no religious stuff in there. You're just trying to lose weight. That would have not been a good thing to say. It's probably the kind of sarcastic thing I would want to say. But the guy asked him, what are you giving up for Lent? And he says, I thought for a moment. Then I answered, you know, I think that this year I'm going to give up trusting in my own works and trust completely in the work of Christ for me. That's the gospel, isn't it? And the guy said, he said, the young man looked puzzled and said, what do you mean? See, curiosity. And he says, well, Leonard says, the more I meditate on Christ's suffering and death, the more I realize that what he has done dwarfs anything I could do for him. And he paused and he said, in fact, I think I'm going to give up trusting in myself for the entire year. And so he says, I asked my young friend to share his testimony about how he relies on Christ instead of his own work, the guy that was with him, and he did. And he says, the young man was hanging on every word. So he says, when I got up to leave, I said, hey, could we pray for you? And the guy that had come from the Lent service said, yes. And please pray that I would give up relying on myself and instead rely on what Christ has done for me. Isn't that a beautiful way he got the gospel across? By showing an interest in where this guy was coming from rather than being critical. So I know our time is about up here. Let me just show you one quick thing here. learning to connect with people relationally. Dale Carnegie, in his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, he says, don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Give honest, sincere appreciation. Arouse in the other person a want. That's what a testimony tailored to their situation can do. Become genuinely interested in people. Smile. Remember that a person's name is to that person the sweetest and most important sound in any language. So in other words, learn their name. Be a good listener. Encourage others to talk about themselves. Talk in terms of the other person's interests. So I know that's a secular book. It's not a Christian book. But notice how similar those principles are to what we're trying to teach in this course. Be nice to people. Okay? Show an interest in them. All right. So here's a question real quickly. How does listening more than you speak change how you feel about sharing your faith and the process of sharing your faith? Any comments? Basically, in the process that we've been going through of trying to teach you to ask questions and listen, how does that change the way you feel about sharing your faith? Any comments on that?
I think people like to talk about themselves all the time. So when you keep talking about yourself, you are not interested in that person.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so they are interested. And so it makes it easy. If you know you're going to ask them questions about themselves, there's no pressure on you because you don't have a memorized script you're giving them. You're just drawing things out of them. Okay? What else?
I know when I was talking with Xavier Tuesday morning, I did try to ask more questions. And just engaging and being focused on him, because it's real easy for me just to start talking and almost have diarrhea of the mouth or whatever. But, you know, asking him, engaging him, and listening made me realize and value him more.
Yeah.
And just pray that God, you know, be attuned to how the Holy Spirit was leading.
Yeah, good. Other comments? Yeah, does it make it seem easier to have conversations with people or harder? Yeah, John.
What you're teaching here, what we've been hearing for the last few weeks, it makes it a lot easier to share your faith.
Yeah.
When you just quieten yourself down. You know, I've always been one to sort of jump on people. But it really makes it a lot easier.
It does. It really does. That's what I found. Okay, let's look at the second question. What issues are still hanging in your mind about this method that needs to be addressed before the end of the course? I'm not talking about a specific about how do I witness to a Muslim who's married to a Jew, but I'm talking about the general things on the method of that we're talking about. Yeah.
How do you discern between a smokescreen and something that's actually an issue for that person that would prevent them from coming to Christ? Like if they bring up abortion or if they bring up, you know, certain different issues, how do you know if they're just trying to get off the main topic or if it's really important to them?
Really serious. Great. That's a great question. I'm glad Benny will be able to answer that on this. We're gonna answer these on week 7 and I won't be here. Benny will be doing that. But that's a good question. Yep. Somebody else? All right, well, you've got some assignments in your book. Tim Keller's interview with Becky Pippert, there's a link to it. It's only 4.5 minutes long. There's also Becky Pippert's interview with a student named Naomi in England, and that's 7.5 minutes. So it's not real long. These are on YouTube, and you will enjoy those. You'll learn a lot. And then if you really want to dive in deep, go for the 47-minute interview with Rosaria Butterfield, who was a former lesbian and who became a Christian because of a 2-year conversation with a pastor. That's really interesting to hear her story of how God used a person who used this very method to eventually bring her to Christ. And then we're giving you a handout again tonight. Is it on a blue sheet there, Benny? Yeah. And so this is supplemental articles. There's 2 of them. One is by Tim Barnett. It's called Encountering a Relativist. In other words, many people in our world today think morals and ethics and religion are all relative. You know, Oprah Winfrey's a great promoter of this. You know, you live your truth sort of idea. And so this is an article that a guy tells an actual conversation he had with a relativist, how he handled it. And the good thing about this article, it's only 4 pages long, is he describes his thought processes, why he was responding as he did to the guy. So it's a great example of what we're talking about. And then the last article is A Stone in the Shoe by Greg Kochel. We've been talking about that, a better explanation by Greg Kochel on how to put a stone in someone's shoe. All right, so let's pray, and we'll see you next week. Lord, thank you for loving us and giving us an opportunity to talk to people. I pray for this week that you would give us further conversations with people we've already talked to, or you would introduce us to new people that we could begin conversations with. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.